Hey, soccer fans and SO peeps, and welcome to Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central. I am Nick, your host for tonight, as we recap all the action from around Major League Soccer this past weekend, August 26th through the 28th in tonight's show. In the first half, we're going to hit those recaps, we're going to hit those scores, talk about how the playoff picture is coming into focus a little bit, as well as get some live reactions from all of our viewers live here on YouTube. We're going to ask the question, is LAFC a fraud? Is Seattle's playoff streak over and is Philly peaking too early? We'll take a look in the show. And in the second half of the video, we are going to profile Austin FC fresh off their big win against LAFC, definitely putting into question who is the top team in the West. And then if we got time, we'll take questions from all of our viewers live tonight. So stay tuned. We're going to hit that intro and let that music get you pumped. Hey, soccer fans, welcome again to another episode of Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central MLS Weekly Recap. We appreciate you joining us to talk all things Major League Soccer. And I got to give my thanks to everyone who has already jumped in the chat so far. COD Gaming Shorts, A New Wiseman, T-Mac Jr., and Zachary Harden. Appreciate you all being with us, leaving your comments, joining the conversation, and helping us grow the game through conversation. That's always been our goal here at Sons of a Pitch. And if you all, whether you're listening live on YouTube or on our podcast, available on all your podcast locations in the future, if you want to support the show and help us continue in our mission, please leave a super chat, leave a super thanks after the live video has been posted to YouTube. Or if you want to discuss something a little bit more substantive, if you want to talk sponsorships for your business, we're more than happy to discuss that. You can DM us on Twitter at SOP Soccer or email us podcast@sonsofapitchsoccer.com. Or if you want to keep it directly on YouTube or on our upcoming website we're developing, you can email us at sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. So with all of that out of the way, let's get right into our results here. And the league must have been thrilled with the way things started, having Austin and LAFC kicking things off on a Friday night, only to have that roll into Portland hosting Seattle. This is incredible, guys. Austin just dominates LAFC 4-1 in the weekend opening. This was a statement game. Now, it was a statement for Austin because they have shown now that they can dismantle the best team in the league, and they are a legitimate cup contender. Maybe a double contender. I don't know if they're going to be able to win the Shield this year, but they are a legitimate cup contender with that offense. Now, this may have also been a statement game for LAFC, but in a different sense, right? Bale and Kalini didn't play more than 60 minutes. Latif Blessing, who's kind of been a key piece for them, comes in at halftime. So if you really want to rip LAFC, you can't really rip their offense because their best guys hadn't really been playing that much. Rip their defense. The expected goals on this game was 0.6 expected goals for Austin, and somehow they end up with 4 in the back of the net, far exceeding any of the models and predictions. LAFC's defense looked slow, and that could be trouble for them, as we've seen the last couple three seasons in the playoffs when they get knocked out in those single game eliminations, right? Now, we're going to talk more Austin FC in the second half of the show and figure out exactly what is working for them. But let's continue on for this Friday night game. Portland 2, Seattle 1. Another statement game for both teams because Portland was above the playoff line. And we're going to check the standings. Let me check real quick so I can give you the right info. They have just slipped into the 8th place spot because of the LA Galaxy result, but they are right there. Portland will not fade away down the stretch here. So it's a statement for them, beating a rival, winning the Cascadia Trophy, right? But it was also a bit of a statement for Seattle because we heard Brian Smetzer come out afterwards in his post games and literally make the statement that we're not good enough. It doesn't sound like Seattle is confident going into the last stretch of games here, and it doesn't look like they are going to be making the playoffs for a record, what is it now, 14 straight seasons since coming into the league? Anyway, Sebastian Blanco gets the winner in the 51st minute, and I don't have the stats exactly, but when Blanco scores a goal, I feel like Portland has a pretty high winning percentage. So if anyone can find that, send it over our way. We'd love to see it. What was odd about this game is that Portland actually controlled the game in the first half, and that's when Seattle scored. And then Seattle dominated possession in the second half, and that's when Portland got their two goals. If you actually look at the possession graphic, the bar chart showing 5-minute segments of the game on MLSsoccer.com, you see, like, here's Portland's possession in the first half, and it's 1-0 Seattle. And then here's all of Seattle's possession in the second half, and then it's 2-1 Portland. Very odd kind of flow to the game on it. But nevertheless, an exciting one, a big statement game for Portland. Let's take a quick check-in with everyone in the chat. We got Bernardo Labrada here. Bro, great to see you. Jason Jardim is back, dropping the TFC logos in the chat. Connor knows soccer. Hey, man, great to see you jumping in. We're going to cover that draw in the Hell is Real Derby in just a minute. Hani Mukhtar edits, great to have you back with us, keeping us up to date and honest on all things Nashville. And Junior here, wish I never betted on NYC over the weekend. Oh, my gosh, we're going to talk about that parlay that you and Mike were playing. And by the way, everybody, make sure you subscribe and like to the videos for the betting picks and predictions that we do. I put that video out Wednesday nights. Junior's been putting some great picks out on there. Mike and he are talking. Mike's starting to get a little confident. So if you think you can make a few bucks betting on the league, make sure you can find those videos as well. So thanks to everyone for checking in. Now let's take a look getting into the Saturday games. August 27th opens up with Minnesota hosting Houston Dynamo. Now, you'd think this was going to be an easy win for Minnesota, but, you know, to Houston's credit, they came out and gave them a little bit of a game, and it's an excellent come-from-behind victory for Minnesota. What's interesting, last week on the show, Mike said he's not confident in Minnesota. They got to string it together first. Well, Mike, Minnesota has 7 wins, 2 draws, and 1 loss in their last 10 games, so I hope that's Minnesota stringing enough wins together to give you some confidence to them going into the playoffs. And this come-from-behind victory does it for me. This isn't a Minnesota team who's going to say, well, we're down to the worst team in the league. You know what? Let's come back and get them. We're still sitting pretty in the Western Conference. It's not like Houston's going to jump up. No, they came back, they battled, and 2 late goals, the 79th and the 84th minute, and that's what winning teams do. I will say it didn't look like a very clean game, partly because my Twitter feed was not working and streaming properly, but partly if you look at the passing numbers, both teams had under 400 passes each, and high 70, low 80 kind of percentile passing. Didn't look very clean to me, or a lot of defensive passing. That's what I'll say. Minnesota's a team on the rise. Got to take them seriously. They are not that Minnesota team where they're going to flounder in the playoffs. They've got experience. They've got the talent. They've got the coaching. Watch out for them come playoff time. Moving down, Red Bulls of New York, 3-1 victors over Inter Miami. I really thought Miami was going to pull the upset off in this one, and it looked like they were early on. Higuain, I think it was in like the 26th minute or so, just rockets a free kick into the upper 90. And I said, the upset is on. And then I got upset when Red Bulls come back and drop 3 on them. Now, the biggest storyline out of this one was Alejandro Pozuelo getting the red card for a just ridiculous, dangerous play. And I have a picture of it here. Let me show it on the screen. This is actually Pozuelo. Wait a minute, that's not it. Here, this is better. But you can see the resemblance. This is Pozuelo in black for Miami, putting his boot into the chest of a Red Bull player there. They initially show yellow, they review it, they go straight red at that point, and Miami's down to 10 men in the first half. Red Bull's press takes its toll, and they end up getting 3 goals here. Now, Caden Clark also had a banger in this one. Great goal, and it was funny because a couple years back, our very brief and our very kind of tangential Caden Clark story here, a couple of years back, we did an interview with Joe Falla of Red Bulls 2, who was at the time teammates of Caden Clark. So he's following us on Twitter. Caden Clark, I guess here's the interview, or here's Joe tell him about it. Caden Clark starts following us on Twitter, and I'll be darned, he still is a follower of ours on Twitter. So shout out to Caden Clark, the rising American star. He's going to be leaving Red Bulls New York this winter, heading overseas. So let's keep an eye on him and give him our support. Now, here's the thing, though. Despite the big loss, Miami's still alive and above the playoff line. Their next five matches are against the Crew, the Fire, then they travel to the Crew, then have DC and Toronto. Miami is very much in control of its playoff future here. They put together a run of form against those five teams. They could potentially knock the Crew out of the playoffs, keep Toronto beneath them in the table, and secure a playoff spot. So Miami very much in control. Next matchup, that Hell is Real derby we were talking about, Connor. Cincinnati 2, Columbus 2. Another Hell is Real draw. Four draws in 10 matches between these two rivals. Both of them really wanted 3 points in order to elevate themselves up that table a little bit. So it's a bummer for if you're a Columbus supporter or a Cincinnati supporter. But as a neutral, I mean, what a game, right? What a game. Now, Pat Noonan, Cincinnati's coach, was pissed. And he comes out after the game and talks a lot about the officiating. Meanwhile, Caleb Porter comes out and praises his team for always fighting, always being in these games. And it's one of the few times I agree with what Porter's doing, right? Maybe not tactically, but the way he showed Zardes out the door, kind of the way he handles himself after losing big games. But he comes out and he praises his team, and he's right. They are in the thick of every game. With all these 4, 5, 6 goal games, Columbus, I don't think, has ever been blown out, or at least not recently. So I will give Porter credit where it's due. He has his team believing and fighting in every game. Real quick note, Brandon Vasquez gets another one for FC Cincinnati. Definitely improving his odds of getting called into that September camp for the U.S. Now, we got to talk about Philadelphia Union scoring another touchdown, this time against the Colorado Rapids. 6-0 Union. Real quick, Colorado continues their slide. One win in their last 5 games. They have 4 straight winless, and they're now 11th in the West. Looks like last season was a fluke for the Rapids. But getting back to the Union, we profiled them 2 weeks ago, so I don't want to spend too much time on the Union, but they did set MLS history with the most 6-goal games ever. Not just in a season, not just nothing like that. Philadelphia now has the most 6-goal games in all of MLS history, and they did it in the last 10 games. This is, you know, Sporting Kansas City is the next most 6-goal scoring team. Yeah, I'll spit it out eventually, right? Kansas City has scored 4 goals in MLS, 4 games with 6 goals in MLS history, but the Union have scored 6 goals in 6 games this season. It's incredible what their offense is doing. And of course, what does Jim Curtin say in the post game? He says how great their defense is playing. He loves the clean sheets, right? It's incredible. It's incredible. Let's take a quick look here at some of the comments over here in the chat. We got Connor coming in saying that Etienne's goal was offside. He needs to drop the subject, otherwise he'll start dropping F-bombs. Yeah, you know, they've looked at it, and actually I think the statement that came out was that there was no good camera angle to conclusively show that it was clear and obvious that he was offside, so they had to go with the call on the field on that one. I appreciate you guys, T-Mac and Jay, for laughing at my sad a bit of humor showing a karate kick from an actual karate class for Pozuelo. Thank you, guys. Jay says, did Poz break up with his Miami girlfriend? Like, what was he thinking? Who knows, man? I don't know what goes through that guy's head. As a TFC fan, I think you could also say nobody knows what goes through that guy's head. We got Dan Gehringer checking in. Dan, great to have you with us on the chat, as well as brother BKL. Salutations to everyone in the SOP fam. All right, let's keep it rolling. We now have my hometown team, Chicago, hosting Montreal and dropping the game 2-0 to the Club de Foot, right? And this about ends the Fire's playoff run. They'd have to have pretty much perfect form here on out. And what was upsetting is they never really looked threatening in the final third. We know their defense is totally banged up, knocked out, injuries, what have you, but their offense just never looked like they knew what they were doing. Also, when Montreal had the ball, the defense just kept backpedaling. All of a sudden, you're in your own 18. You can't backpedal any further. Montreal just teed up for a couple shots. Free kick definitely helped Montreal. But what was interesting to me is, and let me know, fans out there, do you guys think Montreal, for being second place in the Eastern Conference and having this kind of paltry 2-0 win against a real struggling Chicago team, do they look like a real contender for MLS Cup? They didn't show it in this game. Now, we've talked about Kyoto. We've talked about Jordy Mihailovic. We've talked about some of the other role players on that team who are excellent by MLS standards, right? And Jordy just got his big transfer over to AZ Alkmaar, right? They're talking about Ismail Kone, a possible move as well this winter. Some top talent, right? But I just didn't see them play like a trophy-winning team. Let me know what you all think about that, because I can't get behind Montreal as a trophy-winning team. I can get behind them and support them and you know, have a lot of fun with their fans. Solid squad, good storylines, right? Especially with Thierry Henry leaving and Wilfred Nancy picking up where he left off, and they continue their build. You know, I just can't see him as winning a trophy this year. T-Mac jumps in and says, I think Montreal is the clear second-best team in the East. Not sure they have good enough goalkeeping to get them a trophy. Not a bad statement there. Not a bad statement. Is Maxime Crépeau still playing for them, or did he make a move? I can't remember. Got to go look at my goalkeeping transfer chart. And we got a new Wiseman saying Chicago Fire is ash. Yep, they definitely are burning. And Hani Mukhtar edits, did Chicago actually have a playoff run? You know, they kind of did. Before the international break, they were just terrible. But then coming out of the international break, I think they ended up winning like 6 of 10 games and then picking up a couple draws after that. And then they just couldn't find these recent results against other Eastern Conference teams that are keeping them out. Yes, thank you guys. Crépeau is at LAFC. I'm trying to remember who is now between the sticks for Montreal. Well, we continue with another Canadian team, this time TFC traveling to Charlotte. Charlotte, an excellent home team, but Charlotte did not get the job done against Toronto. They fall 2-0 to the men in red from north of the border. And you know what? TFC with this, it's a big win for them. I think Charlotte probably hit that expansion wall. Don't know how to handle these kind of late season pushes. But TFC, big win. They jump over another Eastern Conference playoff hopeful team. They are now sitting in 10th place, just 3 points behind 7th place Columbus. However, Toronto is even with Atlanta on, I think, 33 points at this point. Now, TFC's next three games will be a challenge for them. They are at home against the Galaxy, at home against the aforementioned Montreal, and then they travel to Atlanta. That Toronto-Atlanta game could make or break TFC's season as it stands right now. And why don't you guys get some comments going? Get some messages off to Mike on Twitter at SOP Soccer. Shoot a few emails over to him at sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. And let's see if we can get him to do a live stream watch along for TFC Atlanta, because you know that game is going to be wild. We got a couple other comments in the chat. As Jay puts it, a couple of emojis in the chat for a couple of Italians. I love it. Angus McHorder comes in. Greetings. Even though TFC is good, they will probably not go far in the playoffs. Angus, you're talking about TFC? They are good, but they don't have a defense. So that's going to be tough for them if they get into a shootout. I will give you that. Absolutely. But they might be able to outgun a team. It's possible. T-Mac says TFC might be able to sneak into the playoffs, but their backline is suspect. At best, they could get crushed by Philly or Montreal, especially with how Kyoto has been playing for Montreal. T-Mac, thank you. That's what I was trying to say. You put it perfectly. Hey, Junior's back. Junior, welcome back. As well as I am talking about Montreal. Oh, Angus McHorter talking about Montreal. Yeah, will they be able to go far in the playoffs? Thank you. So I think you and I are looking at the same team, right? They've got the talent, but maybe they don't have the experience. They have been playing like a dominating team. I don't think they're going to make that playoff run. We'll take a look at the conference standings at the beginning of our second half, and we'll see who their potential matchups could be at this point. Running down the schedule. Now we're moving into some of the Western Conference games. Kansas City with a 1-0 win. Now they are only the third worst team in the Western Conference. Good for Kansas City moving up. They get their goal compliments of a 10th-minute Daniel Shalvey strike that literally rolls through like three defenders and the goalkeeper. Go back and watch the highlight. I will say the one highlight of that game, that goal, because it's almost comical about how the defenders are falling all over the place and the ball just kind of trickles in the net. Dallas then draws Real Salt Lake 1-1. Guys, put out an APB. Dallas's offense is missing. In their last 10 games, they have scored four goals twice, but in the other eight, they have never scored more than one goal. So I'm not sure what to make of Dallas's offense other than it's not consistent. And that does not bode well as you're trying to make a stretch run, improve your seeding in the playoffs, and then try to make a run in the playoffs. Meanwhile, RSL is in sixth place. But given the recent run of form and kind of how they've had to play the season and just rely on grit rather than on talent tactics, I'm just waiting for Portland and the LA Galaxy to jump them. So I don't think RSL has a chance right now. Final game on Saturday, Vancouver 0, Nashville 3. Nashville is starting to find a little bit of a groove, but their next several games are against Colorado, Austin, the Galaxy, Austin again, Houston, and LAFC. Now, assuming they beat Colorado and Houston, those other four games are anyone's guess as to how Nashville is going to play. So this could set them up for the playoffs, or if they just want to rotate some squads, you know, take their lumps against Austin and LAFC and then try to get points against the Galaxy, Colorado, and Houston. Could be a coaching decision for them. But we all know how the fans feel about that coach. A little bit on the hot seat from the fans' perspective. Again, that fifth spot is not as secure as it looks for Nashville, but beating Vancouver was a good six-point swing to give them a little breathing room, at least over the Whitecaps. Now we're moving into Sunday, yesterday's games, with some wild finishes. I mean, the league was great to have LAFC, Austin, Portland, Seattle that first weekend, but I don't even think they could have planned how great these finishes were for these games, because you had Atlanta with the late winner against struggling DC 3-2. Joseph comes in as a sub, gets a goal in like his first 2 minutes, I think, off the bench. Great look for Atlanta. I got to give DC credit, though, for a team that is pretty much the wooden spoon holder at this point. They came out with fight. They got a couple of goals, and Rooney even took a yellow card trying to get his team fired up. He's screaming at the fourth official so much, the head ref had to come over and show him yellow. Not enough on the day for DC. Great result for Atlanta, who stays right in the hunt for that playoff spot. Orlando with a 2-1 victory over NYCFC. And this is what Junior and I alluded to earlier. Junior had put out this 5-pick parlay, and Mike got in on it too. And this was the final game. The first four hit, and then they had New York City to win. So, Junior, I'm sorry that that 5-game parlay didn't pay you out the big money that you were thinking. But it was wild because Orlando gets the winner. I think it was on like the final play of the game, 96th minute, something incredible. Orlando now has a 2-game winning streak, but their next three matches are against a desperate Seattle team, a dominating Philadelphia team, and a fighting Atlanta team. So this next stretch run could end Orlando's season or secure a playoff spot for them. We will see. Meanwhile, New York City needed a win. Maybe not for the standings because they did so well the first half of the season. They just need some confidence, man. Their offense has been lacking ever since Tati got transferred. And, man, how much of an impact could one striker have on a team? Well, there it is. They're still talented. They still have a great system. They have Maxi Morales who can pull the strings, be the maestro in the middle, as a lot of people have been calling him, right? But without Tati being that first defender, that's what they're missing the most. You didn't realize how much Tati pressed until he was gone and how much of a work rate that he had when NYC would turn the ball over, right? Or when they would have a shot saved and then he would have to be the first defender starting that press. It's going to be tough for New York City down the stretch and getting into the playoffs. And you just hope that their confidence for NYCFC fans stays high when they get into it. New England versus LA Galaxy wraps up the weekend. The Galaxy get a 2-1 victory here. First of all, go back and check out that goal by Carlos Hill, because It was fantastic. It was an 82nd minute beauty from the build up, play up the back, the rotating the ball around, finding him, taking one touch, and then bending it upper 90 far post. Beautiful goal. Beautiful goal. But unfortunately, it was not enough for New England on the night. Galaxy are inching closer to a playoff appearance. They seem to be putting it together. Two wins and a draw in the last three. Maybe that Ricky Pouche signing has really given them that little bit of extra that they needed. We did also see Chicharito go down after a hard foul. He ends up getting a yellow card for either time wasting or simulation, whatever it was. I think it was time wasting because he refused to exit the pitch, even though he's literally laying right next to the sideline. Hopefully that injury is not bad, but he really needs to do something to get back and find his goal scoring form if LA is going to have any chance of securing a playoff spot and doing anything in the playoffs. Now they are sitting in that seventh spot, and we'll take a look at the conference standings when we do our second half recap. And let's take a quick look at some of the comments here before we jump into our halftime break. Jay, I did not see the Cavallini head stomp. I don't know how I missed that going through the different highlight reels that were there, man, but fill us in or shoot me a link to that or tweet at us and let us know if you got any video on that. That sounds like a ridiculous, ridiculous play. Angus McWhorter says all goals in the Atlanta DCU game were in the second half. Incredible, right? Like five goals in one half of football. It's crazy to think, especially for teams like DC who are struggling. But we all know Atlanta still has a little bit of that offense with them. Brother BKL, who's a big NYCFC fan, says, I don't trust Nick Cushing with different tactics. Seriously, we literally need to win and go after Campione's Cup. I'll be fine to exit in the first round. Imagine that, man. Junior says, I wish I never picked NYC. I think I should stop betting their games. You know, it's hard to find a lock in MLS or just in soccer or football in general, right? It's the way games play, there's so much that goes into it. And the MLS has those added wrinkles of all the travel, right? As well as a lot of the artificial turfs that can affect games, things of that nature. There's a lot of little variables that go into MLS games. Jay says, dude, I can't stand the stupid crap he does. I think you're talking about Cavallini again. To think he will be at Qatar worries me. That'll be tough. T-Mac jumps in and says Cavallini will be suspended for 3 games at least. He stomped on Alex Moyle. Oh, man, I'm going to have to go find that one and take a look at it, because that sounds tough. And I don't think Alex Moyle is the kind of guy who goes around like trying to take cheap shots at people who deserves a stop. I don't know about, I don't know about what was happening in this game, but doesn't seem like that to me. Well, anyway, fans, we're going to take a quick halftime break, little hydration break here. So go ahead, grab yourself a drink, glass of water, maybe some Skira Icelandic spring water guaranteed to quench your thirst. If you are on the podcast side of things, you're going to hear from our very own sponsor and good friend of the show, John Donovan, on all things Chicago Fire, his reactions to the Montreal game. I know he was upset about it. We were texting the next day. But on the YouTube side of things, we're gonna take a quick break. You'll see the card for our sponsor pop on up, and we will be back, everyone, in just a minute. So if you're listening to the podcast, find us on YouTube and subscribe. And if you are listening on YouTube, make sure you download the podcast as well and keep supporting our show that way. Be back in just a minute.
This MLS Weekly Recap is sponsored by Skira Icelandic Spring Water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Icelandic for clear, Skira water comes from a spring in a nature preserve in Iceland with naturally low mineral content. This isn't your average water. Clearly, yes, pun intended, it's one of the best. Get some Skira today at your local 7-Eleven. And now it's time for our weekly Chicago Fire update, brought to you by John Donovan. Take it away, John.
Nick, John Donovan here talking about the Chicago Fire and the MLS. It's always exciting, this end of the season play. It's mystifying how these good coaches start their teams going with 8, 9, 10 games to go. Everybody, especially in the Eastern side, that's what I follow more, the Eastern Conference. Everybody's jockeying for playoff times. I'm watching Toronto make a move Atlanta came away a little bit shy of it, but Miami really shocks me that they're in there. Orlando's in there, although flipping down a little bit. But Cincinnati and Columbus, now there is some excitement in that state. It's just so unfortunate we don't have that in Chicago. But I'll talk about what my remedy is for Chicago soccer a little bit later. So with starting lineup today, they put Torres into the midfield spot for Jimenez, which made no sense. You could see on the floor that Torres kept asking Federico Navarro where he should play. I mean, he did very little in the game. And they have midfielders on the bench. I don't understand why they don't give at least these guys the opportunity to play. Torres did not play well. I don't think many of the Fire players play that well. But so that was a big change to the lineup. They had Gutierrez outright. Duran, who, you know, is always his mischievous self up front. And Mueller, who is clever. He's real clever with the ball. Every time he gets it, you think he's going to score. He must be just hailing a jet to guard because he's very quick with his feet, but just couldn't come across with anything this week. You know, that the front four, front three did not do much in this game. What really hit me is just really depressing, and I've been kind of griping on this for a year, for at least 2 years, is let me ask everybody out there, would you rather have Djihadi Mihajlovic or Shaqiri? I mean, we spent a transfer fee for Shaqiri, and he gets $8 million a year. I believe it's a 3-year guaranteed contract. And the guy was off the field today. He sprinted off the field at 28 minutes with that goofy looking face. And oh, the poor guy, he didn't run 1 foot while he was playing. He did absolutely nothing on the field. So, I mean, they replaced him with Herbers, and if there's any way they can get their money back on that. I listened to a sort of a funny ESPN Europe podcast when they made that trade, and they were just amazed that anybody, that Lyon literally robbed the Fire when they got them to pay a transfer fee. Europe had given up on Shaqiri. I mean, he might play well in the World Cup, but as far as club teams, he's been from club team to club team to club team. He's not a starter. Maybe he's a 10-15 minute guy, but he is not. I mean, he is not the answer for the Chicago Fire. So they played with both of their DPs out and their other young DP Torres playing in a position where he didn't know what the heck he was. So you can imagine where this game was going. But as the game went, the first score was a beautiful score by Montreal. Montreal started really after 5 minutes. It was back and forth for the first 5 minutes, but then Montreal just took it to the Fire. A guy named Coney is from the Ivory Coast, but I think he's playing for Canada. Nailed a beautiful shot that Slonina didn't even have a chance at. Again, it was those center mid defensive midfielders. I believe that was the side that Torres should have been playing. He was wide open and just drilled it. The second score came at 23 minutes into the game. Kyoto had a direct kick off a handball that I don't know whether this referee had such a great game, to tell you the truth. This was a very suspicious. You'd almost had to cut your hand off not to get a handball on this one. His hand was right up against his stomach. But he gave him a handball and then above that gave him a card. So Kyoto stepped up and drilled it right over the top of the wall. It was a lovely shot, but it was a 2-0 game with 23 minutes into the game. And Montreal was dominating. I mean, the Fire looked just so poorly coached. I couldn't tell you. I couldn't tell whether they were attacking or being defensive. And Tony Maiola kept saying that. He said, you know, I can't figure out what this formation is, and I agree. The only forward that really played the position was Duran. Mueller was back trying to bring the ball up, and Gonzalez just, you know, I thought he was going to have a better season, but he's just not. He's not there. So 28 minutes into the game, or a little bit less, that the same guy that scored the first goal for Montreal got himself a second yellow card. And it was a very touchy call. I'm not one that gripes about refs. But this guy, this night, I mean, he had the game just, everybody was just arguing. It got to a point where you didn't even want to watch the game. But he gave this man a red card with 55 minutes to go. And to give you an, I mean, they went in halftime. I'm sure the Fire was excited to get out. But they were so slow on the ball that they just didn't get any opportunities at even one goal. They had one goal that got called back because they were offsides. But the ball just didn't move fast enough to take advantage of their man up. So Montreal played with 10 guys the whole second half. And I tell you, Nancy, the coach of Montreal, he can really work his lineup. He very, very smartly made substitutions. Every couple of minutes, he'd have another guy coming in. He kept the Fire, you know, not comfortable. If he had stayed with the same team, they would have gotten tired, but he just kept refreshing the squad. And you could see that the guy is, you know, is a very smart coach. He spent a lot of time in the academies. I hope he stays in the MLS because he's a very, very good coach to watch. Looking at the Fire players, the one guy I have to admire, and I've given him a tough time this season, is Terán. He played through an injury that I had, a hamstring pull. I thought it was torn that one game, but he came back within three games, which means it was not torn, but it's pulled. And nobody still to, you know, in this game the other day, they could not outrun him. He's a beast. The guy, if he could keep, he seems to be more calm. He seems to understand that this game, you can't yell and scream, which was happening a lot with the Fire. They were just playing out of control. Even Chivas, the German, I mean, you don't win by yelling at referees and pointing fingers at them. It just doesn't work. But Ezra lets it go on. I mean, he got a couple of cards this season. I mean, I think he lost a couple of games because of cards, because he couldn't control his team. So, you know, I'm kind of sick of talking about how bad this particular team is, the Chicago Fire. I've been following them as a season ticket holder from the get-go. And so I finally have a chance to express my opinion through the podcast. And right now, I mean, if Joe Mansueto has any care, and I know he cares about this team, he spent big money, he should make some moves right now, because this squad is not going to get any better. Ezra was an assistant coach for 20 years, and it's obvious why he's an assistant coach. He's not a good head coach. Maybe he's a good assistant coach, but, you know, I don't know how he got that position, whether it was just an ethnic position placement. But you look at Nancy with Montreal, who's an African-American guy. The guy's lights out, incredible. Ezra is just, he's not there. So if I was Joe Mansueto, who, you know, has what, $6 billion, I would fire the following guys: Heights, Peltzer, Klopas, Henderson. Those guys would be gone next game. Maybe get them through this weekday game. But I'd have C.J. Brown as the coach for the remainder of the season. I don't see any – obviously, Klopas has been around for 14 years in that face. I mean, just getting him off the field would probably help the team a lot. But Heights has proved to be really – he has not improved at all. I mean, the trade of Mihaljevic, getting rid of everybody last year. I mean, and then a new team this – it just is not working. Peltzer cannot really – he does not have the touch for talent. Klopas speaks for himself. We've had 14 years of this guy, head coach, not head coach, color announcer, whatever, get rid of him. And Henderson is – you know, you're going to have to bite a big contract, but Henderson is not going to be a good coach. So I hate to leave it with that, Nick, but we've got to make some drastic moves to be like Charlotte, to be like Cincinnati. Cincinnati made, if they didn't like it, they got rid of it until it worked. I'm tired of waiting 2 or 3 years for a guy's contract to be over with in order to move him out. So have a good day. Take care, guys.
Thanks for that Chicago Fire update, John. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay, soccer fans, we are back from our halftime break. I want to thank again John Donovan for giving us all the Chicago Fire updates on the podcast side of things. John, hope the season's not over, but looks pretty tough, man. Maybe we can shake things up. Let's get out to a game and see if we can't cheer them on ourselves. Also, want to thank again Skira Icelandic Spring Water, available at your local 7-Eleven. Support our sponsors, support our show. Get out there, try some Skira. pH balanced water. Love it. I've had a few bottles doing some long broadcasts and streams and things, and it absolutely quenches the thirst, soothes the vocal cords. Guys, go out and pick up some Skira Icelandic Spring Water at your 7-Eleven. And if you want to continue supporting Sons of a Pitch Soccer Central, then make sure that you leave a super chat, leave a super thanks, or reach out to us on Twitter at SOP Soccer or via email, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com, if you want to talk about sponsorships or other ways to support the show. Now, looking at the standings, let's see what things are looking like for the playoffs. Thanks a lot, T-Mac. Can confirm Skira is good. Absolutely. Looking out east, we have Philadelphia on top, no surprise there, followed by Montreal, New York City, and Red Bull New York. Those are our top four teams, with Orlando, Miami, and Columbus rounding out the playoff spots. Columbus and Miami are sitting at 36 points right now. Just below the playoff line, Cincinnati is at 35, New England's at 34, Toronto and Atlanta at 33, Charlotte 32, technically not out of it, but falling, and Chicago on 30, who is falling fast. DC at the bottom of the Eastern Conference with 22 points. Now we're going to take a look out west. Oh no, we wanted to see if the playoffs started today, Montreal, Columbus, that would be a very interesting matchup. I'd have to lean towards Columbus just because of the Zelarayan Cucho Hernandez duo. But that would be an interesting matchup to see Kone and Mihailovic play against those guys. Now in the Western Conference, you've got LAFC, who's already clinched a playoff spot. First team to do so in the league. They're sitting at 57 points right now. Austin, Minnesota, and Dallas round out your top four in the West. Meanwhile, you have Nashville, Salt Lake, and the Galaxy clinching the last three playoff spots. Not clinching, excuse me, sitting in the last three playoff spots for now. LA Galaxy in the seventh spot on 37 points. Portland has 36, Vancouver 34, Seattle 33, but falling. Colorado 32, but falling, and then Kansas City, San Jose, and Houston round out the bottom half of the Western Conference. Well, now, my friends, we are going to get into our team profile, and we are looking at none other than the black and green, the Verde of Austin FC, fresh off their big win over league-leading LAFC. And yes, I do understand that our last two profiles have been to the teams that have defeated LAFC, San Jose and Austin. So I guess you could say they've earned it when you're stomping on the top teams like that. Now, Austin FC, as it stands, 15-6-6 with 51 points. They're averaging 1.89 points per game, second in the West, third overall in the league. Now let's take a look at some of their stats here, guys, because their offense is completely outperforming any of the predictors and models here, right? Their expected goals is 40.3. Actual goals, 59. Expected goals allowed, 43.5. Actual goals allowed, 37. They have a plus 22 goal differential on the season. It is an incredible feat what they're doing offensively in this league. Now, the goals allowed, though, is the only little bit of criticism I'm going to say based on their form and numbers, because if you look at goals allowed, they're on par with Minnesota, Salt Lake, and the Galaxy teams, with the exception of Minnesota, not known for defense, right? And Minnesota really had a rough start. They were leaking goals early on. So if Austin is going to really put together a nice playoff stretch, they may have to put a little wrinkle into their game as we roll through the last several weeks of the season to see if they can't get their defense playing a little bit better. But now let's take a look about how Austin was able to be so successful in only their second season in MLS. And we got to start with head coach Josh Wolf. He set the culture for this team in their expansion season last year. He wasn't worried about results. Obviously, you're worried about results, right? Winning and losing is why we play the game, and it's how ultimately teams and managers are measured. But it was more important to have a set culture, kind of weed out the players that didn't want to be there, as well as staff, right? And people on the administrative side of things. So let's take a look at Josh Wolf. He's played 14 seasons in the MLS. He had 94 goals during his career. And at age 45, he's got a whole coaching career ahead of him. He also had 52 caps for the United States, finding the net 9 times for the red, white, and blue. So he's got an excellent playing pedigree. He was already an assistant coach for DC, Columbus, and the USMNT. So tactically, you're going to see a lot of similarities with Greg Berhalter and what he did at Columbus and is doing with the United States. You're going to have a lot of possession. You're going to build from the back, but you're also going to want to take a look for those quick counters, the diagonal balls, the crossfield switches, whenever the defenses open themselves up. A lot of reading the game has to be done by the midfield, right? Also, so we love his understanding of the game, right? And it's clear his offensive players are thriving with a very offensive-minded coach. I mean, and you saw Maxi Rudy score a goal, and what does he do in celebration? I think he's kind of stopped doing his trademark little bow and arrow thing. He runs to Josh Wolf and gives him a huge hug after the goal. So why is Austin so good? Josh Wolf is one, but also it's roster building. They have the perfect blend of MLS experience, international offense, and good coaching and tactics. We talked about the coach, so let's take a look at the MLS experience, right? Who is on the roster? Alexander Ring, MLS vet. Diego Fagundes, MLS vet. Brad Stuver, in goal, MLS vet. He actually was a pool player for years and then has a number of years as MLS experience. By the way, 74% save percentage on the season. We talked about Maxi Urruti, who's done it for a handful of teams. Nick Lima, Ethan Finley, Danny Hosen, all household MLS names. And then they do it on offense. That's the big story for them. They've got MVP candidate and Golden Boot leader Sebastian Driussi, 19 goals, 5 assists, 3 of those goals coming from the spot. But still, I don't discount that. Some people try to when it fits their narrative. The 26-year-old Argentinian has started every game this season for Austin. And in my opinion, he's one of the few strikers to come out of the Russian league and continue to be successful. I don't have any like numbers or stats to support it. Just kind of my eye test and watching the league and watching some English soccer as well. Usually guys coming out of the Russian league aren't going to be finding form, but Driussi has done it. So you've got his 19 goals on the season, but Austin has 12 other players who have scored goals this season. Rudy has 9, Fagundes has 6, Finlay has 5, Ring has 4, and then there's a handful of guys who have 3-2 or a single goal on the season. Everyone is pitching in. The one criticism that I have for Austin FC, I'm sure other people have more. The one criticism I have for Austin FC is that they've missed on some of their other big international signings. You had Moussa Djite, a Senegalese player, was supposed to be doing what Driussi is doing. He was supposed to kickstart their offense a while back, but so far this season, 1 start, 1 goal. That's it. Also, Rodney Redis was a big signing for them last year, a big name player coming out of Paraguay. Only 11 appearances this season for a total of 167 minutes, no goals, no assists. So they are probably going to be looking to move those guys this offseason, if not, you know, just cutting them directly, because they are not contributing to this Austin team. Now let's take a quick look at their ceiling and their floor, and then we'll get to some of your comments here. So obviously the ceiling for this team is an MLS Cup, maybe a double. If LAFC falls on their face down the stretch, if Philly falls on their face down the stretch, but I don't see that happening. So I think the ceiling here is an MLS Cup. They're scoring, you know, 3, 4, 5 goals a game in the playoffs, and they roll through, they host the MLS Cup. The floor, though, would be like a first-round exit, just a stunner, where they can't embrace what it means to be in a big playoff game, and they fall flat. And, you know, for jokes' sake and for puns' sake, it would be great if Portland sneaks in and Portland knocks them out, because then you can talk about the Portland Timbers chopping down that Austin tree. I think there'd be some good memes out there and some good jokes for that. So that would be my floor for Austin and FC. Now let's take a few comments here, right? BKL says, don't forget, Austin's third place in the supporter shield ladder. Every single minute with 18% goals conversion by Driussi, and his passes has 55%. Not bad stats, right? What else do we see? T-Mac says, Driussi is the clear MVP to me, but Austin really shocked me this year. I thought they weren't a playoff team again since their center backs are so average or worse. Proved me wrong. Yeah, you know what? We never really talk about their defense. And from a goals allowed standpoint, like I said, they're kind of on par with the Galaxy and RSL. Did they draft Kip Keller? Was that their draft pick? Has he come in and put some solid minutes in for them? But as they say, the best defense is a good offense, right? So that could be it. Teams are so worried to get caught out of position and pressing forward against this Austin team that maybe they are starting to sit a little deeper in that. BKL also, back to NYCFC here, man. He says, if Nick Cushing needs to fix those tactics, what could happen in Campione's Cup? David Lee is turning into panic mode. What am I thinking to pick Nick Cushing as interim manager? Interesting. So we've got a lot of chat about Austin FC throughout social media this week. If they are legit, if they can overtake LAFC as the top team in the West, maybe not on points, but maybe on prestige. So I wanted to put this to everyone out there in the chat. Is LAFC a fraud? We're looking at Austin FC playing so well. We're looking at the Galaxy getting better. We've looked at the standings, and we saw that Minnesota is sitting up there in third. Is LAFC a fraud after back-to-back losses to Austin and San Jose? What do you all think? Let us know, because I can't see LAFC being a fraud, despite the chatter being on social media that, oh, look at this, look at that. They're not trying to win every game. They've already clinched a playoff spot. They're sitting pretty in the supporter shield standings, and they don't need to roll out Bale and Kelini week in and week out. They've got plenty of other guys that they're still incorporating. They've still signed guys over the last couple of weeks, some free agents, right? So they are still incorporating that. They're looking to peak at the first round of the playoffs, or if they get that first round bye, their first game of the playoffs. So I don't think LAFC is a fraud. I think they're just being cautious. And it's still Chirundolo's first season as a head coach there. So we'll see what he has in store for the postseason. The other question I posed at the beginning of the show was, is Philadelphia peaking too early? Like I said, in their last 10 games, they've had six games with six goals. It's been pretty incredible, right? And I'm pulling up the form guide here to show how they've been playing. And we'll let it load up here on MLSsoccer.com. Is Philly peaking too early? Let's take a look. I'm going to expand it here. So Philadelphia still has a handful of games left to go here, right? Are they going to be able to keep this rolling, or are they going to kind of trickle out after difficult Eastern Conference games? They've got Atlanta, Red Bulls, Orlando, and Atlanta again to finish up the season for them. That is going to be really difficult to keep playing high-level soccer and then get yourself back up and ready for the playoffs. So I hope Philly, for their sake, is not peaking too early for the playoffs. Well, anyway, that concludes our roundup. I was talking a mile a minute tonight, so we're finishing a couple minutes early. You guys can get to bed early, or if you got other stuff to do, feel free and go ahead and take care of that. Hey, why don't you reach out, send us an email, a super chat, a super thanks, a tweet, something. You can always reach us on Twitter at SOP Soccer, or by email, sonsofapitchsoccer@gmail.com. We are building a website. It is out there. Let me know what you think. It is it's a Wix site for SOP Soccer. I haven't even memorized the web address yet. So go ahead and check it out. sopsoccer.wixsite.com/SOP Soccer. Very early in its development, but let me know what you guys think of it and what we can add to it. Hopefully with the website, we can do some writing and blogging as we approach the World Cup. So if you want to support that, if you want to get your company and get your brand out there on the website with all our expanded content, please email us or DM us on Twitter about sponsorship opportunities. There we go. That's my last sip of water tonight. I want to thank everyone out there for watching, for listening, for joining our conversation. We really appreciate being able to talk to you all, grow the sport through conversation, have such a great community, to see everyone interacting who met here, interacting on their own on Twitter and social media and in our chat here. It's been great having you all for this Monday, August 29th MLS recap. I'm Nick. I'm one of your hosts. On behalf of Mike, thanks everyone for tuning in and for listening. Be sure to like, subscribe, and we will see you next week. Hey, soccer fans, this is Nick once again for SOP Soccer Central. We've been doing it the last several episodes, kind of a post-credit scene where I share a little bit of my soccer memorabilia. So thanks for those who stick around on the podcast and on YouTube. And this little bit of memorabilia here, my I Heart USA Soccer t-shirt that I got from Chris Armas at the Globe Pub in Chicago during World Cup 2010 watch party. He was throwing them out to the crowd. I got an autographed soccer ball from him as well. What a night. I think it was Korea, Nigeria, Greece, and Argentina in that group of games that we were watching. Ended up finding like the only other Greek people in the bar that time and knocking back shots with them and just enjoying the World Cup and seeing Chris Armas behind the bar helping out. And it was just a great memory. My I Heart USA soccer t-shirt makes an appearance every World Cup cycle. So just wanted to share that with you. Thanks again for all the support, everyone. And we will talk to you again soon.